this planet Earth, you're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
Welcome to Season 4 of our Planet Earth series, in which we look at how space technology is helping us understand our home planet. This is Episode 55.
Planet Earth is blue.
Well, on Sunday evening, there was an attempt to launch a remote sensing satellite from New Zealand. It was an American satellite. They counted down to the actual launch time. The engine of the Electron rocket from a rocket lab was launched, ignited, but shut down immediately. And that launch has now been rescheduled for Thursday, tomorrow. Well, what's the mission all about? Well, here was how the commentary went as they were heading towards a launch.
We are honoured to have on board Electron today the first satellite of Capella's new generation synthetic aperture radar spacecraft called Acadia. Capella's constellation of satellites deliver high-quality and high-resolution SAR imagery created by bouncing radar signals off the Earth's surface to map out the area it's pointed over. SAR satellites are able to create images in all weather conditions and at night time when the sun is over the horizon.
The next generation Acadia satellites include several new features that will enable faster downlink speeds and even higher quality images for Capella's customers. Here's more from the company now.
To reiterate, the goal of this pass is to establish contact and assess spacecraft health. Command, do you have any questions? Let's rock and roll.
We learn really fast, and we build satellites here in San Francisco. We learn things quickly, we go back in the factory, and we make changes, and we go back to the launch site and launch new satellites. There's one team and one company in the world that could do this. It's this team and it's this company, it's Capella. And that's why we're the first and only American company that's ever been able to do this. I mean, we were the first American company to put a commercial SAR satellite. We're the highest resolution SAR imagery in the world in the most compact form. We're the first one that's able to do real-time tasking, which means people are going to be able to get their imagery as quickly as it's possible. So it's not just that we've done something as complex as putting a satellite up. We've put up the best satellite in space. So, and we've done that with just 100 or so people in a very short amount of time.
Today's mission is the first of four new dedicated launches we're delivering for Capella as part of a multi-launch contract. These missions follow on from two previous launches of the SAR technology. The first was all the way back in 2020 from Launch Complex 1 right here in New Zealand. And the second was earlier this year, the second mission from our U.S. spaceport, Launch Complex 2 in Virginia. Today's mission, Wheel of the Nightlife, will deploy a single Acadia satellite to a 640-kilometer mid-inclination orbit from LC-1, helping to expand Capella's constellation and provide more rapid revisits across diverse regions on Earth.
And repeating that launch is due tomorrow evening, from the Mahé Peninsula in New Zealand. Now, recent studies by scientists at the Goddard Space Flight Center have shown that plants are becoming less efficient at absorbing atmospheric carbon dioxide. The global average carbon dioxide fertilization effect has decreased from 21% in 1982 to 12% today. That's per 100 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. In other words, the terrestrial ecosystems are becoming less reliable as temporary climate change mitigators. This will make it harder to keep global temperature rises below 2 degrees Celsius. And this feature from the Goddard Space Flight Center.
Carbon dioxide is a kind of plant food. Plants break down carbon dioxide as they make energy through photosynthesis, releasing oxygen in the process. That's why, as humans have increased the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, some places have seen increased plant growth. But that won't continue forever. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, responsible for warming our planet. Right now, the land and the ocean absorb about 55% of the carbon dioxide released by humans. The rest stays in the atmosphere, acting like a blanket around Earth. As the climate gets warmer, plants are absorbing less carbon dioxide. In some places, like the Arctic region, water is becoming scarcer, acting as a limiting factor that inhibits plant growth. In other places, like the tropical latitudes, low soil nutrients limit the growth of plants, even when there's plenty of carbon dioxide. But it's not just external factors that could affect how plants absorb carbon dioxide. As the concentration in the atmosphere increases, plants seem to use less of it. From 1982 to 2015, we've already seen a decrease in how efficient plants are at absorbing carbon dioxide. NASA researchers are using data from a variety of different satellites to calculate how efficient plants are at absorbing carbon dioxide. They're working to understand how more carbon emissions will warm the planet as plants use less of it. Important for understanding how hot Earth will get.
Next time you look up at the sun, think of two things. Firstly, the sun is about 150 million kilometers away. Secondly, unseen by your eyes is a spacecraft that is 1% of the distance to the sun. That is 1.5 million kilometers. This craft is not studying the sun, but rather is looking back at the Earth. It is called DISCOVER, D-S-C-O-V-R, the Deep Space Climate Observatory. By a neat balancing act between the Sun's and the Earth's gravity and orbital dynamics, it is held in place. From there, DISCOVER can continuously study the Sun and the full sunlit disk of the rotating Earth. It has been doing this since 2015. If you might be excused, if you thought that from such a distance, DISCOVER would not be able to see much on the Earth. Well, DISCOVER has two Earth-viewing science instruments. Scientists using them have published more than 90 peer-reviewed papers. Save for a nine-month period in 2019, both instruments continue to function well. One of the instruments is called NiSTAR, an advanced radiometer. It measures the irradiance from the sunlit Earth in three bands that show the outgoing reflected solar and total radiation from the Earth. These measurements assist researchers in answering questions addressing Earth radiation imbalance and predicting future climate change. The second instrument is called EPIC, the Earth Polychromatic Camera. It is able to measure the atmospheric ozone and sulfur dioxide. During 2021 and 2022, EPIC made unique observations of volcanic eruptions, including the long-duration eruptions at La Palma Island and the Galapagos Islands. When the Hunga Tonga Hunga Hape submarine volcano erupted in January of last year, EPIC's successive views of the plume showed that the sulfur dioxide injection height was between 30 and 35 kilometres. EPIC's high-cadence measurements provided new insight into the dynamics of the stratospheric umbrella cloud produced during the eruption. Scientists have also used EPIC data in the near-ultraviolet wavelengths to show an unprecedented increase in atmospheric aerosols on a global scale over the last 5 years. The main sources are from biomass burning in the tropics and an extraordinary increase in the amount of the Saharan desert dust transported across the Atlantic Ocean. The EPIC record shows that the hemispheric scale wildfires over the United States, Canada, and Siberia have become annual phenomena. Not only is EPIC able to detect airborne mineral dust, it can distinguish between the iron oxide species hematite and geothite. Results show a significant seasonal and spatial variability over the main dust source regions. These agree well with the published range of hematite and geotite content based on the in-situ soil samples. One feature that stands out in the EPIC images is the floor of the largely dried-up Lake Chad. The former lake bed is now a major source of fertile dust that gets transported across the Atlantic and supports growth in the Amazon rainforest. In the future, EPIC will be able to provide dust measurements hourly. And now we're going to hear about an instrument that is aboard the International Space Station.
After nearly 4 years on orbit, the Global Ecosystem Dynamics Investigation has ceased operations, at least for the next 18 months. Commonly called JEDI, it was originally planned as a two-year mission. JEDI was extended until March of this year to accomplish its baseline science mission goals, which were delayed by changes to the orbit of the International Space Station. JEDI collected more than 20 billion high-quality observations of the vertical structure and height of the Earth's forests, as well as bare ground and water body elevations. Data from JEDI are being used for a wide range of applications, including biomass estimation, habitat characterization, and wildfire prediction. JEDI's maps of biomass are unique in both their accuracy and their explicit characterization of uncertainty, and are a key component in the estimation of above-ground carbon stocks. These estimations help quantify the impacts of deforestation and subsequent regrowth on atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration. Calls from a variety of stakeholders to keep JEDI in space led NASA headquarters to review the mission in December last year for a potential extension. Based in part on JEDI's unique, timely data and the instrument showing few signs of degradation, NASA decided that the mission should continue, at least through 2026. That decision was provided that space could be found on the International Space Station. Once the decision to extend the mission was final, NASA released a statement explaining that demand is high for external attachment points on the station, and JEDI is scheduled to be temporarily replaced by a Department of Defense payload after more than 4 years of operations. However, the agency is planning to keep the instrument in space and reinstall it to continue through the life of the space station. The hope is that JEDI can be reinstalled in its original location on the space station's Japanese module in the northern autumn of 2024.
In our Planet Earth series, the space show has, on several occasions, mentioned the eco-stress instrument that is attached to the exterior of the International Space Station. Eco-stress is an acronym for Ecosystem Spaceborne Thermal Radiometer Experiment on Space Station. It measures the temperature of the ground, which is hotter than the air temperature during the daytime. This is done by analyzing the infrared radiated by the ground. Now, you may have had your body temperature measured by having a handheld device pointed at your forehead. Early in June, whilst we here in Victoria shivered through a cold start to winter, the American state of Utah was suffering a heat wave. On June the 10th, late in the afternoon, the space station passed 400 kilometres above Las Vegas. Air temperature was 43 Celsius and the temperature on the ground was still higher. Within the city, the hottest surfaces were the streets. Pavement temperatures were over 50 Celsius. The exteriors of downtown buildings were a few degrees cooler. Out in the suburbs, neighborhoods averaged 8 Celsius cooler than the pavement. The coolest places, at 13 Celsius cooler than the pavement, were green spaces such as golf courses. It is no surprise that the streets were so hot, as asphalt absorbs up to 95% of solar radiation and retains heat for hours into the night time. No wonder some places in Australia are experimenting with white or grey road surfaces.
In 1972, the first Landsat satellite was launched into orbit, ushering in a revolutionary new era of Earth observation. More than 50 years and 8 satellites later, the Landsat program has collected an immense amount of data that's proven an invaluable resource to scientists studying the complexities of our planet's surface. The abundance of data provides insights, but it can also pose a daunting challenge for researchers to extract and analyze information. Landsats 8 and 9 alone each gather close to a terabyte of data per day. Enter artificial intelligence. AI's popularity has taken off in recent years, with new tools that allow users to generate imagery, transcribe audio, and even compose music at the click of a button. This is nothing new for the scientific community, however, which have been using artificial intelligence methods for decades. When it comes to working with Landsat data, one of the most popular AI tools is machine learning. Machine learning is a subset of AI that can train computer programs to recognize patterns and analyze imagery, skills that prove exceptionally useful in the application of Landsat data. In fact, when combined with Landsat, machine learning models have led to a number of advances across a variety of scientific fields, granting further insight into our planet's past, present, and future. One of the major challenges of working with satellite imagery like Landsat can actually be found up in the sky. Clouds. Obscuring Earth's surface and casting shadows that reduce visibility, a cloudy day can be a downright nuisance when it comes to analyzing certain satellite imagery. Pinpointing these clouds helps to improve data quality by removing noise and artifacts, making it easier to detect changes over time. But while accurate cloud detection across a massive dataset such as Landsat's would be a tall task for anyone human, it's a piece of cake for a computer. In 2019, researchers from Oregon State University constructed a deep convolutional neural network model, a machine learning tool that excels at recognizing patterns in imagery. With the help of existing Landsat 8 data, they taught their neural network to automatically detect clouds in satellite imagery with an amazing 97.1% accuracy rate. The researchers believe in the future, cloud detection algorithms like this one could even be harnessed to identify clouds across the entire Landsat 8 archive. Machine learning's benefits don't just end when the clouds clear. Down on the ground, there's plenty to keep an eye on. Our planet's one constant is change. Earth's surface is perpetually evolving due to human and natural forces. Landsat's ability to track these changes over time has proven to be an incredible asset to the scientific community, especially when used in concert with machine learning. For example, researchers from the University of Texas at Austin used Landsat data with a random forest classifier, yet another type of machine learning tool that combines multiple decision trees to make predictions. Using data from Landsats 4 through 8, they used the classifier to map changes in land use in northwestern Belize from the 1980s to the present. The results showed that tropical forests and wetlands that don't have a designated protection status are increasingly vulnerable to deforestation due to Belize's expanding industrial agriculture. By combining these new advances in machine learning with Landsat's capacity for looking back in time, researchers believe in the future this approach would make it possible to provide robust estimates of deforestation in Belize. As climate change drives our planet's temperatures higher, so does the prevalence of extreme events that put ecosystems at risk. Wildfires across the globe have increased in frequency and intensity. Australia is no stranger to these types of fires. The 2019-2020 bushfire season was one of the most destructive on record. Using satellite imagery to pinpoint when and where wildfires are burning can be an important tool for assessing damage in future fires. Researchers at the University of Western Australia developed a new machine learning approach with the help of Landsat 8 data to generate a 16-year history of wildfire severity in the eucalyptus forests of the continent's southwest. They fed data gathered by satellites, including Landsat 8, in 2005 to 2020, into a supervised classifier, a type of machine learning algorithm that learns to classify data based on labeled examples provided during training. By teaching the algorithm with examples from the past, this method of machine learning could be used to predict the severity of future wildfires, critical data that could aid in the management and conservation of Australia's extensive eucalyptus forests. These are just a few examples of the remarkable ways Landsat data and machine learning tools are unlocking new possibilities for understanding our planet. This combination has already led to significant advances in agriculture, forestry, urban planning, climate change research, and more. As more satellite data becomes available and machine learning techniques continue to improve, so too will the potential for applications in additional fields critical to the health of our planet's ecosystems. In tackling the complex challenges of today and tomorrow, the blending of Landsat data and machine learning will be vital to help people make better decisions to protect our planet.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
This is Planet Earth. You're looking at Planet Earth. Ba, 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 ba. This is Planet Earth.
And now on Planet Earth, the space show, we're going to hear a song. Now, the songwriters are going to look at how humans are rapidly consuming the limited resources on our home planet and look towards the perceived riches to be extracted from the moon, planets, and asteroids. Now, in their view, there is only one way to go, and that's into outer space. And this is Julia Eklar, Arlen Robbins, and Joey Soji with Jim Fox Davies.
Throughout history, man has sought prosperity by daring to challenge the unknown. Through the ages, he's discovered, exploited, and recovered all the riches of this planet for his own. Thus improving his condition, he's confronted with decision what to do about the future on a world that he's outgrown. Well, there's only one way to go from here, one way to go. It's logical, it's clear. There's only one way to go from here, without a doubt. The only way to go from here is out. Overpopulation, unemployment and inflation, destruction of the Earth's ecology, and limited supplies of energy deny a base for developing third world industry. Starvation and poverty, or wealth from technology, expansion is the key to a healthy world economy. And there's only one way to go from here, one way to go. It's logical, it's clear. There's only one way to go from here, without a doubt. The only way to go from here is out.
Cars replacing horses, now petroleum resources face depletion, for the century is through. And they're under the assumption that our energy consumption can be met by synthesizing fossil fuels. Solar power's the solution when considering pollution, or someday we might be frying in a cloud of CO2. Then there's
only one way to go from here, one way to go. It's logical, it's clear. There's only one way to go from here, without a doubt. The only way to go from here is out.
Breaking free of gravity, moving industry beyond the planet's surface into space. Lunar mines and factories, Lagrange Point colonies, total productivity, and nothing goes to waste. Solar sailing ships deployed to mine the asteroids, while Earth becomes a paradise, her ugly scars erased. 'Cause there's
only one way to go from here, one way.
obstacle is clear. There's only one way to go from here. Without a doubt, the only way to go from here is out.
Throughout the solar system, man will spread and requisition all the elements of the planets and the moons. More than just surviving, flourishing and thriving, until some future day when once again he faces doom. In 1,000 years or two, he'll lament now what to do. We're exhausting our resources, and we're running out of room. There's
only one way to go from here, one way to go. It's logical, it's clear. There's only one way to go from here. Without a doubt, the only way to go from here is out.
So reach for the stars, they're not that far.
Without a doubt, the only way to go from here, the only way to go from here.
The European Space Agency has signed a contract with the Swedish company OHB to build a prototype satellite for the Arctic Weather Satellite mission. This prototype is the forerunner of a potential constellation of satellites that would supply an almost constant stream of temperature and humidity data from every location on Earth. For the first time, very short-range weather forecasting will be available in the Arctic. Not only that, meteorologists will also use the mission to improve weather forecasts around the world.
The air we breathe is composed of a mixture of atmospheric gases and aerosols, the exact composition of which varies at any given moment depending upon a host of environmental factors. The emissions from both naturally occurring and or human-produced sources combine to produce surface-level ozone and other pollutants. Natural sources include lightning, sea surface spray, and fires. Human-produced sources include cars, trucks, power plants, bushfires, and cargo ships. For decades, satellite-based instruments have provided insights into the physical and chemical processes that influence Earth's atmosphere and contribute to air pollution, impacting not just human health, but ecosystems worldwide. NASA's Tropospheric Emissions Monitoring of Pollution mission will revolutionize how atmospheric chemistry is measured and tracked from space. The instrument is commonly referred to by its acronym, TEMPO. TEMPO will be the first space-based instrument to monitor major air pollutants across North America every daylight hour at high spatial resolution. TEMPO will measure 4 of the 6 criteria air pollutants tracked by the United States Environmental Protection Agency as part of enforcing the Clean Air Act. These include nitrogen dioxide, ground-level ozone, sulfur dioxide and particulate matter with diameters less than 2.5 micrometers. Pollutants frequently undergo rapid chemical reactions during downwind transport, resulting in a lack of comprehensive observations of their transport and transformation. While increasingly powerful satellite-based instruments have provided us with critical insights into the physical processes that govern our atmosphere, even the latest technologies face a significant difficulty when studying air pollution. Their data have limited temporal resolution. Early air quality instruments circled the Earth in low orbit, passing the same ground track once per day in line with the sun, meaning they could only measure air quality over a particular region every 24 hours. For several decades, this has prevented researchers from answering some of the most pressing questions relating to air quality, including precisely how much pollution is being emitted, where it comes from, and how it varies over time. To allow for more frequent sampling, TEMPO has been placed in geostationary orbit. That is the position where satellites remain at the same point relative to Earth's surface by orbiting above its equator, with an orbital time matching Earth's rotation. This will allow the satellite to continuously monitor the same area on the Earth's surface and measure air quality once per hour at any given location during the day. TEMPO measures, directly or by proxy, the major elements of tropospheric ozone chemistry, scanning for pollution across the contiguous United States. Measurements include lower tropospheric ozone, nitrogen dioxide, formaldehyde, glyoxal, water vapor, halogen oxides, aerosols, clouds, ultraviolet B radiation, and foliage properties. A global team of scientists, led by Kelly Chance of the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, will analyze these measurements of North American pollution. This will be the most in-depth to-date measurement of these chemicals that affect both natural environments and our own health. By leveraging high spatial and temporal resolutions, TEMPO will be able to pinpoint where pollution is coming from, and how particular sources vary over time. Kelly Chance explains, TEMPO will track pollution loading, transport, and transformation. It also will provide near real-time air quality products, measure the key elements of air pollution chemistry, and measure the UV exposure index. TEMPO has joined a constellation of geostationary satellites. TEMPO will be collecting data during a time frame when two other geostationary pollution monitoring satellites from Asia and Europe. The Geostationary Environment Monitoring Spectrometer on the Geostationary Korea Multipurpose Satellite No. 2 and Europe's Sentinel-4 sensor on the Meteosat third-generation sounder will also be in operation. Together, the three instruments will form a geostationary air quality constellation. The Korea Aerospace Research Institute launched GEMS on 2020 February 18. Like the TEMPO instrument itself, the GEMS instrument was built by Ball Aerospace in Boulder, Colorado. As a result, the two instruments share many design elements. The GEMS spectrometer also observes the UV and visible parts of the spectrum. The Sentinel-4 spectrometer is scheduled for launch in 2024 and will observe the ultraviolet, visible, and, unlike TEMPO, near-infrared portions of the spectrum. The combination of the three geostationary instruments and other instruments currently in low Earth orbit making global, but less frequent, observations, creates an atmospheric composition virtual constellation able to measure atmospheric pollution down to a spatial resolution of 10 square kilometers. TEMPO was launched attached to Intelsat's 40E commercial communication satellite on April 7 on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. From there, TEMPO maneuvered into geostationary orbit. This position enables TEMPO to sweep North America once every hour, providing a unique vantage point to continuously observe the continent. The Intelsat 40E is designed for an operational lifespan of 15 years. The TEMPO instrument design life is on the order of 2 years. However, NASA has negotiated optional hosting of TEMPO beyond the prime mission duration in 2-year blocks for approximately 10 years total. The hourly data from NASA's TEMPO mission bring new possibilities to conduct in-depth analyses of North American pollution. TEMPO will be able to collect pollution data covering Mexico, the United States, and Canada on an hourly basis during daytime, and will examine a large region that is home to a diverse array of communities, species, and environments. These hourly measurements made from geostationary orbit capture the high variability present in the diurnal cycle of emissions and chemistry that are unobservable from current LEO satellites that measure once per day. The nadir view allows TEMPO to maintain a constant view of North America for the instrument's light-collecting mirror to make a complete east-to-west scan of the field of regard during each hour of the daytime. The instrument's optical system resolves pollution levels to regions of several square kilometers per pixel as opposed to existing limits of about 100 square kilometers, so that pollution can be tracked at suburban scales. Concentrations of some pollutants vary significantly throughout the course of the day, and from day to night. The high spatiotemporal resolution of the TEMPO dataset will enable tracking of these variations in the concentrations of pollutants in much more detail than current observations allow. This will provide researchers, air quality managers, and policymakers with improved ability to track the changing chemical weather locally, regionally, and across the continent. By measuring sunlight reflected and scattered from Earth's surface and atmosphere back to the instrument's detectors, TEMPO's ultraviolet and visible sensors will provide the spectra of various trace gases that are important for understanding air quality. As noted earlier, TEMPO measurements will be a powerful tool for observing and assessing pollution's impact on human health. Hourly estimates of gaseous air pollutants from TEMPO will be included as inputs for air pollution exposure calculations needed to understand the health effects of air pollution. For example, harmful air pollution levels may lead to notifications or prompts for specific patients to avoid physical exertion or to stay indoors when possible. This usage can also underscore the importance of effective disease management, whereby individuals who live in areas with chronically higher levels of air pollution can be encouraged to see their doctor for a medical checkup. The ability to observe and attribute air pollution events over the entire TEMPO field of view offers a wide breadth of promising policy and societal benefits. While the TEMPO mission will improve understanding of important air quality emissions over Greater North America, the mission plans to use as much as 25% of the observing time for special operations. A focus of the special operations will be disaster events, such as wildfires, dust storms, volcanic eruptions, and industrial accidents, along with unique chemistry experiments aimed at further enhancing our understanding of rapidly varying emissions and air pollutants in complex environments. These operations can be performed in the first 4 months after launch during the commissioning phase of the mission. The special scan mode can be easily initiated a few days after notice of an impending or occurring event, with the potential to initiate observations about an hour after notification of the event. There is also considerable flexibility in the specifications of temporal frequency, for example as frequently as every 10 minutes, and swath width with the special scans. To sum up, as the first space-based instrument to monitor major air pollutants across North America every daylight hour at high spatial resolution, the TEMPO mission will revolutionize the way scientists study air pollutant emissions. This ranges from determining the quantity of emissions, pinpointing their naturally occurring or anthropogenic origins, to analyzing changes over time. A single component within a larger constellation of geostationary satellites, TEMPO will provide near real-time data products that will significantly improve air quality forecasting around the most densely populated areas of the Northern Hemisphere. These data can become predictive indicators for damage to biological systems and the general environment. By empowering the public with tools to easily utilize these data, and through engagement activities like the Early Adopters Program, the future of TEMPO data looks promising for a growing number of health, environmental, and air quality applications that will benefit society for years to come.
88.3 Southern FM.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.
Robert Green is the principal investigator at EMIT for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Now, EMIT stands for the Earth Surface Mineral Dust Source Investigation. Public Affairs at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory asked Robert Green about EMIT, and I'm going to read the questions here in the studio. So, Robert, what is EMIT?
Okay, EMIT is an instrument designed to answer a specific question, but because it's answering that question, it can also answer other questions. It turns out that the Earth has a mineral dust cycle. When there are high winds blowing across arid lands, dust is emitted into the atmosphere, where it starts to interact with the Earth system. It immediately changes the chemistry of the atmosphere. It can play a role in how clouds are formed. It can scatter light back into space, those little mineral particles. It can absorb light if they're dark particles and heat the Earth. And then when it's deposited in terrestrial ecosystems, in plants on the surface, it can provide a nutrient. It does so for the Brazilian rainforests. When it lands in oceans, it can provide a nutrient. When it lands on snow, it can change how they melt. That impacts water resources here in California, for example. And then when it arrives in our cities, it's little dust particles. They can be a visibility hazard. They can also be a bit of a toxic hazard. So there's this important cycle of dust. And EMIT is designed to help us answer a really important question is, what is the dust made of? And it, because there are different minerals in different places of the Earth, we want to know when the winds blow, what kind of particles are being blown into the atmosphere? Are they light particles, dark particles, more acidic particles, more basic particles? And how are those going to interact with our Earth system? And I can show just an example. EMIT is designed to help us understand this dust cycle. And the particular problem EMIT is tackling is that currently when we model dust in the Earth system, we rely on only 5,000 measurements around planet Earth for the whole planet, where we know the minerals for those locations. With EMIT's imaging spectroscopy, we can take that from 5,000 to a billion measurements all over the arid land and really improve our ability to understand radiative forcing and the other elements of mineral dust in the Earth system. So that's what EMIT is. It's an instrument to collect spectra for the arid land regions of our planet, to address that important question of heating or cooling of our planet and the other interactions throughout the Earth system.
And what is the prime mission of EMIT?
So the prime mission really is to understand if mineral dust currently is heating or cooling our planet. We don't know whether it's heating or cooling. And then the secondary objective is to understand with these climate models constrained by EMIT measurements, how will the dust cycle change in the future? Would there be more regions for mineral dust or less regions? And how will that impact the climate in the future? So it's got two climate objectives, understanding how dust is impacting our climate today and how it might impact our climate in the future. Okay, EMIT really is the first of its kind of this class of imaging spectrometer. We brought technology that's only just become available, even though we did the first imaging spectrometer quite a while ago. This one has the very latest detector, the very latest design. It has very high signal to noise or very high precision. We can see very small variations in minerals and other elements of the Earth system. So it's really the first of this next class of imaging spectrometer, and it's here to study our Earth with the focus on the EMIT science objectives, but it may also help with other science objectives.
Robert, please tell us about greenhouse gases.
We had to measure this spectral range where minerals absorb light so we could answer our question of what minerals are on the surface of the Earth. So that range extends out into the short wavelength infrared, as we would call it. It turns out that the absorption of methane and carbon dioxide, these gases in the Earth system, also occur in this spectral range. So we thought there would be some sensitivity with EMIT when it was launched and began imaging our Earth. And it's turned out there is. It's better than our expectations. So we are now able to map plumes of methane coming from various point sources, and also carbon dioxide also coming from point sources. So we're seeing some new spectacular plumes. We've now been asked by NASA to map the methane plumes that we see with EMIT and make those available for others to make decisions about how they might want to address these methane sources. So these are the plumes of methane across six continents that EMIT has seen, even though it was launched less than a year ago. And we're up into many hundred plumes, and we're making this available to all who are interested to understand those plumes and think about how they might choose to address those methane occurrences.
And what additional data sets can EMIT gather?
The data set, while we're focused on the arid land regions, we collect adjacent data sets which have all these different signatures or fingerprints of the Earth system. So some related to snow and ice, when we capture those, we can understand, is there dust on the snow? What's the brightness of the snow? Is it going to melt more quickly or more slowly? So that relates to water resources and hydrology. In many of the arid land regions, when we're next to an ocean, that's often an area where there are coral reefs and seagrass. So the EMIT data set can be used, while not for the prime objective, scientists who are interested in using the EMIT data set to investigate important questions about aquatic systems, seagrass, coral reefs. And then there are terrestrial ecosystems around all these arid land systems, like we have here in California. And the spectral fingerprints of vegetation are also available for people to pose and answer questions and pursue applications. In fact, excitingly, NASA has just released an opportunity for scientists and others to propose to use these data sets and support their use of these data sets. And that's just been released in the last couple of weeks. So that will really grow the utility of these spectacular new measurements that really are first in their class in terms of their signal to noise and other excellent properties.
Are there any future instruments on the horizon?
The National Academy of Science Decadal Survey called for NASA to work on the next generation observations for our planet. And we call those part of the Earth System Observatory. One key element of that Earth System Observatory is called Surface Biology and Geology, and it includes a wide swath imaging spectrometer of the emit type, except scaled to the next level, using the next level of technology. So SBG, or Surface Biology and Geology, will map the entire Earth pole to pole every 16 days. And those data will allow us to take all these science and application objectives that we're testing with EMIT, that's risk reduction, we'll be able to use them now routinely into the future with the Surface Biology and Geology data set. So I'm very excited about where we're going and how EMIT can play an important role in preparing us for that era of global coverage.
In what way will EMIT help with land use decisions or even disaster recovery?
EMIT can give you the information to make some decisions about how you might adjust land use, right? You could imagine how you use the land can create more cases where it's easier for dust to launch into the atmosphere or harder for dust to launch into the atmosphere. In fact, there's a great experiment in California at Owens Lake where they're looking, they know about the dust, and they're figuring out how they would modify the surface to try to minimize the dust that's launched into the atmosphere that again results in dust storms. This can provide important information for disaster recovery and understanding disasters. After volcanic eruptions, you could understand a number of things about where the dust particles went, where the damage was. We can see where the lava is flowing. There's information we can provide. We were actually used an airborne spectrometer after the Gulf oil spill to understand how much oil was on the water and how it would impact the ecosystem. So there's a large number of applications to address hazards and disaster response with this type of imaging spectroscopy. That will also be true in the future with the Surface and Biology and Geology mission.
And what is the range of the colors that EMIT can detect?
We measure 285 wavelengths in the electromagnetic spectrum, starting from the visible, where our eyes see, well out into the shortwave infrared. So, yes, we have you have a three-color camera. EMIT is like a 285-color camera going into wavelength ranges that our eyes can't possibly see. Another interesting point is when I was in graduate school, I was trying to measure a spectrum like EMIT, and it took me about 10 minutes on a laboratory spectrometer. Right now in orbit, EMIT is measuring 300,000 spectra per second. So that's a spectacular thing for me to think about going back to my graduate school days and what we can do today to achieve all these objectives that EMIT enables.
Now, the world's suffering a lot of bushfires at the moment. Can EMIT help identify those?
And EMIT-type measurements can contribute in several ways to understanding wildfires. We can map species type, which relates to burnability. We can look at the dry biomass, how much burnable material is there, and how much water is in the leaves. All those are spectral signatures that EMIT captures in this spectral range. So those would be things to tell you what the risk is. If we see a fire, we can actually say how hot the fire is very carefully and what might be next to it that might burn. And after a fire, we can look at burn severity. How severe was the fire? How badly was the ecosystem damaged? And then into the future, we can look at how recovery might occur as we look at data sets. How are the ecosystems evolving after they've lived through a fire? So there are many elements for this type of spectroscopy.
Thank you, Robert Green, the principal investigator at EMIT for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.